We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
It's Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U. AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
All right, welcome back. Hour number two. Joe Zagacki, Don Bailey Jr., we'll be at Hard Rock Stadium Saturday night, 7:30 kickoff. Our pregame begins at 3:30. So Don and I will be anchored in separate booths on Saturday, socially distanced and all that stuff. And looking forward to Miami and Florida State getting a second look at the University of Miami from ESPN. It's Kirk Herbstreit. Herbie, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. How are you tonight?
I'm great. How you guys doing?
We're doing good, and you'd appreciate this. My partner, Don Bailey, of course, was captain of the University of Miami football team in the 80s. Jim Kelly was his quarterback. Their first matchup, I think Don was eyeball to eyeball with Bruce Clark. But Don's father was also very good friends with Lee Corso. They ran around high school together.
I love that. Same high school?
Went to Jackson, Miami Jackson. They were generals. That's right.
Oh, that's awesome. By the way, is that still a high school? Does that still exist?
It's absolutely there, and it's been productive. Coach Harris, a guy who played in the NFL for a long time, was a coach there recently, and they've done very, very well.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Lee always likes to tell stories about his time down there and just growing up, what it was like for him. Obviously, ends up going to Tallahassee, to Florida State, but he's told me a bunch of stories about some high school football games down there.
Well, it was him, and then Joe Brodsky. I don't know if you remember Coach Brodsky was one of the guys that ran around with him as well. And Coach Brodsky was a running back coach and a high school coach and won a bunch of Super Bowls with the Dallas Cowboys. So that was a pretty impressive gang they had.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Those are fond years to reminisce about.
Oh yeah.
One of my first jobs on the radio was I did a college afternoon scoreboard show on Saturdays in the early 80s. And every Saturday, without fail, a nice lady would call and say, could you please give me the Indiana score? And it was Lee Corso's mother.
Oh, that's good. What are the odds of getting a call about the IU score, right, in Florida? Yeah. You're not gonna get that request very often.
But I do appreciate how you take care. I know you guys, he's in Orlando or wherever this year, but you've done a great job of taking care of him through the years and treating him with such great respect. It's really, really, very, very warm to see.
Well, he's my guy. I mean, he's just a special person to anybody he comes in contact with. And I've been lucky enough to be with him for 25 years. And we've had an interesting run, you know. Life goes on, life changes. You know, for me, I got married, I had kids. My kids now, I have twins that are 20, and he's always been there for me, somebody I can talk to and get advice from, and advice about my career. You know, and he'll sit there and listen and nod his head and listen. And you'll go on for 10 minutes with whatever your issue is. And then he's like Don Corleone. He sits there and he gives you one sentence to just make all of it make sense. And you're like, wow, okay, okay, I see it now. I see it now. I appreciate it. I can't tell you how many times he's done that with me. So just obviously love him to death, and he's my guy. And, anything I can do to be a good teammate to him, I tried to do.
Hey, this will be your second look-see at the University of Miami.
Yeah.
What was your impression Saturday night?
Well, I think it was pretty obvious for people that anybody watched the game. I mean, I probably went on and on a little bit too much because I'm a Miami fan. Like, I like to see this program do well. Early part of my career, I worked on Thursday nights with Mike Tirico and Lee Corso. We would have Miami, you know, back in the 99, 2000, 01 years, and just kind of saw their program up close and got really close to a lot of those players in that era. And I just always was very fond of them and always appreciated, you know, the way they carried themselves, because as an outsider, I had a very different perception. You know, I watched, you know, you mentioned you played in the 80s, like, you know, I played in the early 90s, and Miami, you know, to me, without knowing the players and the brotherhood within that school and that team, you know, you would see them, you know, talking trash and doing this and doing that. And it was easy to kind of look at them and say, man, I don't get this program. And then for me, I was lucky enough to do that job and meet guys and meet the coaches. So I don't know. They just evolved. It's always been a program I've always wanted to do well. And so there's been some really lean years, obviously. And so to see this team the other night with De'Ara King and Rhett Lashley in this new system and Cam Harris continuing to look good. And there's just a lot there. Brevin Jordan's, I think, a superstar. There's a lot there to be excited about, and you know, there's a long way to go, obviously. A big game, rivalry game with Florida State, bye week, and then Clemson. So we'll find out who they really are, but there's enough pieces on the offensive side to really get excited for what they can do. And to me, the defense also has some pieces. You know, I think they got to mature and play with more discipline, but they've got some alphas on that side of the ball. This Jalen Phillips, I think, by the time we get to the middle of October, providing we can keep playing, I think the whole nation is going to start saying, who the heck is that 15 on Miami? Wow, that guy is a monster. I mean, he's a dominant player against the run. He gets extension, uses his hands, gets off blocks. And then, you know, as a pass rusher, he can go around guys or over, just go through them. So I'm a fan. Look forward to seeing what happens on Saturday night, but hope they keep their wits about them and stay focused and don't buy into the headlines and all the hype that they're starting to receive.
I watched your comments during the game. I always go back and watch the TV copy, and De'Ara King, I believe, was rolling to the left and made a fantastic throw, and you were like, I can't believe it. I can't believe this guy. Yeah. It's like, this isn't supposed to happen. And I mean, you were like, wow, somebody can do this? I mean,
I was just like, I just had appreciation for it.
I know you did. Like, I know you did.
I was trying to make Fowler understand, like, how sick of a throw that was. I mean, dude, rolling to his left, he's got his offensive tackle right in his face, who's 6'5", and he goes right over top of him. And he could have – I don't know if he could have handed it any better to that on that throw to the receiver.
Yeah. I mean, he actually left his feet on the throw. I mean, I know.
He changed like a jump pass.
Yeah. But, you know, Kirk, he has made, as you've watched this program, in the shortest period of time, I don't know that I've ever seen anybody make such a big impact.
No, I mean, Russell Wilson comes to mind for me. He left NC State, as you guys know.
Right, went to Wisconsin.
And showed up in Madison. He was there for 4 weeks and was voted unanimously a team captain. And his temperament and his style of the way he carried himself reminds me a lot, not Russell, you know, the other night against the Patriots, but as a college player, reminds me a lot of De'Ara King, you know, in a similar situation where he had started a number of games in Raleigh and then left and had 1 year in Madison to kind of make it all happen and actually led his team to a Rose Bowl. I mean, he had a great year. And De'Ara, he's very humble. He's a grinder. He keeps his head down. You know, he's just all about the process, you know, as Coach Saban says. And I think this program, you guys know way better than me. I know they've had some names, but they've not had stability at that position, to me, since Ken Dorsey. I mean, Brock Berlin had some good years. They've had, you know, some names that we thought might do that. Ja'Cory Harris was a big name, and Brad Kaya, you know, had some moments. But I don't know if they've had anything like this. And I think it really impacts not just the offense, But I think it impacts the defense, the confidence that they'll have now, just a belief that we got a quarterback and we got an offense that's going to score, and we're in every game, you know, and that really can rub off on everybody. And I hope that he stays healthy and this thing continues for him.
I would add to your point, Kirk, that the guys in Miami history, if you go back to Dorsey and go back to when Don played with Jim Kelly and Mark Richt and the guys in between, Kosar and Testaverde and Gino, all those guys understood that in this town, in Miami, playing quarterback is a big responsibility every day. You are the second NFL team here. You know, you're going to be compared to Dan Marino. You're going to be compared to Vinny Testaverde. I think Derek King understands that. I think he understands responsibility.
Yeah, and think about what he's been through in his own life. You know, I think it just gives him a different lens of maturity. You know, he really enjoyed his time at Houston. It wasn't like he was kicking and screaming and, you know, you're not being nice to me, so I'm leaving. You know, he started 19 games, had a great career, and played 4 games last year and then was kind of asked to redshirt, which is an unusual move. I remember talking to him, actually, that week. George Whitfield, who knows him and works with him, put us in touch together, and we just had a nice talk for, I don't know, 30 or 40 minutes. I didn't know him until that conversation. And I was just kind of, he was just picking my brain and we were just talking. And I just remember hanging the phone up and said to George, like, this guy's different. You know, he's very, very mature for his age. And then after that, what he went through on a personal level with his father, you know, passing and his mom getting sick and having breast cancer and fighting back from that. So I think he just has a different feel for the game, a different level of maturity, like I said, and because he's been through a lot, you know. I mean, he's, I don't know how old he is, 22, he's going on 30, you know, for everything he's been through. And he really carries himself that way. And, again, it's 2 games. We'll see how it goes. But I've got a lot of faith in Rhett Lashley. I've followed his career very closely. And I think he's a head coach in a year or two somewhere. He's going to have those kind of credentials, and I've been doing it 25 years. There's certain coordinators you talk to and you just know, you know, you're talking to a guy that's going to be a head coach in a year or two. And he's got that feel to him. And in the meantime, you guys are getting a taste of how he operates. Like he's from that system where it's not like, you know, you and I, when we're up by a score or two, where we're going to run the ball and kill the clock. I mean, he's in attack mode until it's done, you know, until the horn goes off. And that's a different mindset than I think Miami's had in a long, long time. He's basically bringing him into the 21st century.
Kirk, when you look at the last season, you end with a horrible ending for Miami fans. You end with 3 losses. But then Coach Diaz figures it out pretty quick. He hires Lashley, brings in Coach Likens, who is an outstanding receiver coach, and Garen Justice is from what I would imagine. We had 15 sacks in the first 2 games last year. You've got a couple logged, but in reality, the offense line hasn't given up any. So he goes and he brings in those 3 guys. Then he goes to the portal, and you got Roche and Phillips and then Borgalis, the kicker.
My gosh.
I mean, you talk about fixing everything pretty darn quick. Manny Diaz did a great job with getting this ship turned in the right direction.
Absolutely. That's a really good point. He just went down the list of things that he clearly addressed and needed to address. And Manny's a great guy, and another guy that, you know, you watched his career grow, and he learned from so many great people that he was able to work with throughout his career as an assistant and then a coordinator. And again, another guy that has that temperament. You could see him eventually becoming a head coach. He's got a great story himself, and you know how he got into the business and how he took off. I mean, I remember years and years ago, whenever I'd go around Florida State when he was really young, and you had Mickey there and Chuck Amato, you know, and he was like a shadow to those guys. And then, you know, of course, followed Chuck up to Raleigh. So he's had a great run. He's been able to watch a lot of things and learn. And I think the adjustments that he made, as you said, from one season to the next has helped him. But to me, I think it's about culture too. You know, I think it's about getting this program to get back to, you know, those glory years of the 80s and the 90s. It wasn't just about the swag and the dancing. It was about to me, when I watched Ed Reed up close, it was about a competitive spirit that was unparalleled anywhere in the country. And as a senior or a junior, you handed that down to the freshmen. And then the freshmen became sophomores, and the sophomores became juniors, and then they kept handing it down. It was like an accountability. You know, you talk to a Jonathan Vilma or any of these guys who were alphas in that program in the glory years, they took pride in the program, not the trash talking, but the program and handing down that legacy to the next guy at their position. And they got to get back to that, you know, and they got to recognize the importance of that. And I'm hoping they're taking the steps because this is bigger than winning games. It's bigger than beating Louisville. It's about getting back to that brotherhood of winning and accountability and holding each other accountable and bringing back those teams that other teams feared because of what that tight bond that they had. It wasn't about going to the league. We can deal with that later. Right now, it's about destroying the team that's on the other sideline. And they've had it at moments, but it's been very erratic and very inconsistent. So to me, if I'm Manny, I'm working on that as much as tweaking the offense or doing this or that. I think it's about that culture and getting that back. And I know he's trying to get it back.
Yeah, no, that's a very, very, very fair analysis. And I think Don and I would tell you, we are advocates of having an older team. And Miami's been in a position where often they've had to play guys too early who were too young. And you look at it now, you mentioned Jalen Phillips. Phillips and Roche are older guys that keep Harvey and Cameron Williams on the sidelines where they can play in spots. And then you safeties, you have Amari Carter and Bubba Bolden, older guy, Zach McLeod, older guy, linebacker. And I think that helps the maturity and also helps develop other younger players.
And I think that's a great point. And I would add one last thing. We live in an era where if you don't have, like, if you're not locked in to your program, you're very easily influenced and impacted by social media. Like, a guy would rather get a cool shot to put on his Instagram for his followers than, like, really dig in and compete and battle and grind because he loves the game and he loves his teammates. And these coaches today in college football, they're not just battling an opponent. They're battling their own team dealing with that. That's their world. They grew up with that in middle school. They grew up with that in high school. And they come to college with that. They walk around with their phones. They're looking at their phones. They're on Snapchat, Instagram, whatever it is, Twitter. And they want to put a cool picture up on that for all their followers. And it's like, that's okay to do if it's like, and also you get to do that. But in the meantime, let's keep our laser focus on, it's Sunday. What's our focus on Sunday? It's Monday. What's our focus on Monday? And then on down the line, I'm telling you, say whatever you want about Nick Saban. He's figured that out. He's figured out a way to get his guys to buy into that. And it's not an easy thing to do for any coach to get them to buy in, to care, to love the game. It was in the 80s and 90s and the 70s and you know, go back as far as you want. But today there's a lot of distractions and a coach is constantly trying to battle that.
Kirk, you mentioned you have two twin sons that are 20. So let's say you've got those two sons have the chance to go to the National Football League. They've got National Football League talent. How are you being a father to them? How are you being a manager to them? How are you being someone that guides them to make that decision? What are your parameters to leave early or to stay? If they have a great, let's say they're juniors and are third year guys or fourth year guys, doesn't matter. But what would your guidelines be if you had to write the guidelines to stay or to go? What were some of the things that you would make sure that these young players thought about? Because we see the mistakes happen time and time again that kids cut out early and they're done before they even get started.
They don't even get drafted.
Right.
Or they get drafted and they go for a year on the practice squad and then they're gone. And I don't think you can write a script and say this applies to every player. because everybody has different backgrounds and different needs as far as, you know, what's going on with their family. And they want to try to be able to, in some cases, be able to provide and help their family. And then in other cases that, you know, you may be just focusing strictly on the league and am I ready to go? All these players don't hope to go to the NFL. They know they're going. Every player thinks he's going to go to the NFL and make a lot of money. So when you think about that, you got to realize that, to me, as a coach, what, again, going back to what Nick Saban, if he has a guy like Derrick Henry, who just won a Heisman, who's a junior, and Derrick Henry, Coach Saban always brings his guys who are ready as after their third year, he'll bring them in, meet with them the Monday after their last game, and he'll meet with them individually and talk to them about it. This is the word from the NFL. Derrick, you're 6'4", 235 pounds. You run a 4.5. You're not going to get any faster. You're not going to get any bigger. You just won the Heisman. Hey, we loved having you here. You got to go. Like, so he'll tell him the truth, you know, and then the next guy will come in and be like, hey, Ronnie Harrison, you're a safety. You got to get faster. You got to read things quicker. You have so much room for improvement. My recommendation is you need to come back and keep working, right? And then Ronnie came out. He did his own thing. That's fine. A lot of these players, though, whatever coach tells them, he's got their best interest in mind, and most of them listen to him and go that path. I just think that there's such a focus on the league and making it, and I get that. And I just worry that we're getting further and further away from that degree and how important and what a game changer that degree can be in your life. I love chasing the NFL. I think every player should chase the NFL. But I think you're making a huge mistake by putting all your eggs into that basket. That's your only focus is 3 years and out, then there's nothing Nick Saban or Manny Diaz or anybody can say, because you've been thinking that probably since you were in middle school. I'm going to go to 3 years and I'm going to be out. And then you get drafted some cases in the fifth or sixth round and you end up never making the team. Some guys do, but a lot of guys don't. And now they don't have that degree. And a lot of them go back home. And that to me is a bigger issue in college football than anything going right now. Paying players, name, image, and likeness. It's making sure these players take advantage of the system instead of the system taking advantage of them. And I'm a classic example. I love to go to the NFL. I thought I was going to go to the NFL, but I got a degree. I didn't go to the NFL. I ended up getting into local radio. And then one thing led to another, but my name at the time in Columbus, Ohio, being a former captain and player, quarterback at Ohio State, that opened the door for me, and I was able to walk through that door based on having a skill set to be on the radio. But if I didn't play at Ohio State, that door wouldn't have opened for me. So I was able to take advantage and have an awareness of taking advantage of the system. I think a lot of guys, they don't take advantage of the system. And if you don't, you're on an assembly line and the system will take care of you most definitely. So I mean, there's so much to get into there, but I you can't really just say it's one answer. Here's what you need to do to go out. Here's what you need to do to stay. Cause I think it's so different for each individual story and everybody's background and what they bring to the table.
That's great advice, one that we should put on an endless loop and play in every team meeting room. You've been very generous with your time. I want to thank Cameron Gorby, America's greatest communications director, for reaching out to you for us. He is the man.
He's the man.
I'm telling you now, I deal with all of them. You guys probably deal with a ton of them in the ACC. He's as good as there is out there. And I always look forward when we have a Miami game. I get a text from him on Sunday, and he's passionate about the Canes, that's for sure.
He's trainable. Well, listen, after the last 6 months, we cannot wait. I cannot wait until Saturday night for Miami and Florida State. Hopefully we'll have great weather. The restaurants are open. You can eat outdoors on Friday or go to Fowler's house. He's got a great view.
I love it. That's great. Well, I look forward to getting down there. Hopefully the humidity will come down just a little bit. But I always, anytime Miami and Florida State get together, and I'm lucky enough to be in the booth. I just love seeing, for me growing up in the 80s and 90s, you just love to see those uniforms on the same field together. And a lot of these guys played high school football together, and they'll be passionate, be a lot of emotion out there. So we're fired up to get down there and looking forward to a game day in the morning and then to be able to call the game that night. We're anxious and looking forward to it.
All right. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Best of luck on Saturday. Hope to see you.
Okay. Have a great week, guys.
Thank you.
All right. That's Kirk Herbstreit from ESPN joining us. And that was a lot of fun. He gave very gracious with his time. You know, those guys get a lot of people asking their time. And so that was nice. He had great advice there to your question.
Well, he did. And it's basically each person should evaluate exactly where they are and exactly where they think they're going to go, because there's not much guessing anymore, right, Joseph? I mean, the coaches give you, your family has access to the information. You really have a good idea where you're going to go, and look at it as an odds maker. What are the odds for a fifth rounder, the fourth rounder, a seventh rounder, a free agent? And you got to look at it that way.
Well, University of Miami's done a good job graduating their players. We got to get to Lou Headley in a minute. We talked about Amari Carter. He already has his degree. I was watching a game the other day, Rayshon Jenkins playing in the league. When he first started here, he had a back injury, but he ended up getting his degree, and he's doing well in the NFL. But if that doesn't last, you know, a couple more years, who knows? He's got his degree. A lot of guys have their degree. Feliciano was one of your favorite players, and Isadora, and we've seen one after another get a degree at the UM. So, and then the guys that leave early, we would love them to stay, but they also have the ability to come back and get their degree, and some do, and they take advantage of it. So we'll talk more about that. We got to get to a break and bring on Lou Headley, the Hurricanes punter. We'll do that next right here on the Hurricane Hotline.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.